Hello and welcome back to another edition of Editing Aloud. And once again, our country is a site of battle and drama. We have Malusi Gigaba telling Parliament that the Guptas didn't have South African passports, and within about 3 seconds, the internet lighting up with pictures of the Guptas' South African passports. We have ongoing agonizing over the land issue. Sean Abrams, for some reason or other, still in his job as chief prosecutor, is in Parliament today giving evidence as to why all the Guptas seem to have gotten away and all their underlings seem to have been arrested around the Estina case, at the very least. And I was wondering, panel, just to start with Malusi Gigaba, very controversially managed to keep a job in the cabinet. His position since he was given it has gotten worse. He's been caught lying, or the DA found the judgment of him lying to, been found to have lied to court on the Fireblade matter. And yesterday he tells the country that the Guptas aren't South African citizens and their passports are all over the social media. Ron, how does Cyril Ramaphosa, the president, deal with this now? He's got a clearly a lying Home Affairs Minister.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, I think Cyril, in today's reshuffle, maybe he was thinking he could hold on until next year, but I think this tells him that he has to come, that whole idea of shrinking his cabinet has to happen now, and people like Gigaba now have to be taken out of. I mean, this is quite embarrassing. I can't understand why he'd wait until next year's election. So I think people like Gigaba, we're all surprised that they survived, but they have some strength in the ANC, within the ANC, but this almost calls, okay, now you need to deal with Gigaba, deal with people like Sean Abrams and so on, now, instead of postponing it until next year, and especially when you have...
Because it's not going to get any better, is it, Tim Cohen? I mean, it's not as if Gigaba's not going to lie again about something else, because he's in a jam. He's going to get called before Parliament. He's going to get called before the commission into a judicial commission into state capture, and he's going to lie to them too, because he can't tell the truth.
I mean, you know, though, it's a curiosity, isn't it? Because, you know, if you're the cynic in you wants to believe, or might believe, or might be tempted to believe, that Cyril Ramaphosa is just waiting for these people to, you know, he's giving them enough rope to kind of hang themselves, you know, which is why Gigaba suddenly got Home Affairs again, you know, the... that's one explanation. The other explanation, of course, is that he Ramaphosa needed to make some very fast changes, which is, you know, step 1A of the process, and step 1, you know, B, C, D, and E are still to come. So this is how he sorted himself out. But I mean, the counter argument is that, you know, Home Affairs is not going to go away. It's not going to be one of the departments that, you know, gets shrunk. You're not going to incorporate Home Affairs.
Well, if anything, it should be bigger.
Exactly. So he did make a decision to give Gigaba, you know, one of the posts that is not going to be shrunk, that cannot be shrunk, you know, that wasn't expanded. So it's a curiosity. But I think he's really, I mean, Gigaba's really shot himself in the foot now. This is...
The argument being, Sukonathi, is that he needed to keep as many people from KwaZulu-Natal in the cabinet as he could, because to make up for the fact that there are none in the top six of the ANC. But presumably there are many people in the KZN ANC who are perfectly capable of running an efficient and morally, you know, correct Home Affairs department.
Ramaphosa must have been spoiled for choice then.
Yeah.
He could have chosen the guy who gave us the fire pool, Nadine Tleko. He could have... he was really spoiled for choice.
No, this is an attack on the Zulu Nation.
Hold on about what you're talking about. Yeah.
What has never made sense to me is why he gave him Home Affairs back. Because we shouldn't forget the extraordinary damage that Malusi Gigaba did to Home Affairs, and in fact the economy, when he last had that portfolio, when he clamped down on visas, with quite dire effects for tourism, which have survived him.
Cues once again of coming to his defence. Those regulations were gazetted before he became the minister.
That is true, but he insisted on enforcing them.
They were in fact the brainchild of somebody who's now thought Naledi Pandor, who we all think of this great liberal, towering intellectual.
But the issue with ANC with Kikawa,
and they were the most insane things that anybody's ever done to this economy.
Yeah, but he could have. Yeah. I mean, he could have stopped it.
But this is the point.
The issue with Kikawa is that he's the only person ANC has invested. He's a youth, right? He's a youth, the minister. He's a young one, the supposed the young one.
The future.
Yeah, the future. But the only guy they've invested in happens to be Kikawa. There's so much put into this guy that I don't know. Without him, it's him or Figid. Literally, those are two people who to take on Judith Malema. And
then
so this is
what they're stuck with.
Exactly. So you move Kikawa, then you're bringing someone like Senzo Mkhunu or someone, but that'll be an older generation of the ANC again. So they got no solution to that whole youth issue within the ANC, which is ultimately their problem. Yeah, how do they fend off Judith Malema? And I guess DAs, Musi Maimane,
and so on. It's like they're on. Who else is there? Young people in South Africa.
That's the problem.
There's trillions, but they've
put so much into this one guy. I can't even see them looking beyond it. There's many of them, right? There's a gang of them, okay?
So but they shall just pretend. So
now they don't know what to do with
him.
This is their star. This is star pupil. This isn't Becky's star pupil, right? This is their investment. This is their guy. Unfortunately, he's been caught lying now. So now they must deal with this thing. And
for
unfortunately,
10 years.
Mbalula's out. Kikawa's out. Okay, so what's your answer to this? The youth argument, Colin Maine, youth leader.
They can put all of that with all his houses and the Gupta financed everything. but there we go. Malusi's chickens have come home to roost.
Yeah.
But actually, Malusi Kikawa is not the biggest of problems here. There's a guy called Mahlome Tshwete.
Oh, wow!
Totally. If that guy is Malusi's key advisor, I could use a word that would.
Yeah, but I mean, we could have a go at spokesmen and all of that. But I mean, they really are. They do, you know, they represent their ministers as best they can. Some of them don't do a good job. Some of them do a good job. I know.
Our ancestors on the African continent have always said, that fly that has no advisor will follow a corpse all the way to the burial ground. This is what we are having.
Yeah, but Mahlome had nothing to do with
who's lying on the radio every day?
No. But when Malusi Gigaba first put the Gupta proxies onto those boards of those companies, Mahlome Tshwete was nowhere to be seen.
Yeah.
Okay. So he didn't initiate this.
The next thing we have to examine here is Peter Bruce's relationship with Malusi Gigaba.
No, yes. You can do that if you like. I've written about it extensively.
I think like what Malusi's problem is, right? He's not a thinking man. He's surrounded with people who say how smart he is. People like everyone around him tells him how smart you are.
Sure.
Everyone around him. That's his circle. The issue is, but if he was with a better circle, unfortunately, it's too late now. Clearly, the circle has led him to where it is.
Yeah.
He's the smartest guy in the room, in his room, but he's not. Malusi is not as smart as we are told he is. He's not as smart. Like generally, in my book, he's not that smart.
We've got pictures up on our wall. Viewers of Gigaba dressed in the same suit as a new entrant into our body politic does the rounds. A Pakistani, I suppose he's going to be a businessman or an investor or whatever, called Imran Butt, who is pictured now regularly with the likes of Becky Kele, Jackson Tembu, Nomvula Mokonyane, and of course Malusi Gigaba. So you'll be hearing more of Imran Butt. He and Imran, I think, share the same tailor, and I'm sure they'll be sharing much more given the opportunities. But Cyril, there seems to be something going on in government that's really quite worrying. You have a fairly chaotic land debate, and I'm still not sure, Tim Cohen, whether you read the correctly what was taken out of the motion. i.e. that it should cause no economic damage. Because quite a lot of writers are still writing as if that was in the debate, including an article you ran in Business Day just yesterday from Tony Leon, where he says...
Yes.
Yeah. So...
Whenever ANC people talk about this, they include the two major caveats that it mustn't affect food security and it mustn't affect the economy. Yeah. Those are the sort of caveats.
Well, that's what Tony Leon reported.
Yeah, yeah, and people have said that before and during and after
and
the debate.
The president has said it.
And the president has said it, and you know, so we can assume as
you were saying in your column that it wasn't in their motion.
Yeah, no, it wasn't in the motion. I mean, I don't think that's. it's not difficult to check if you want to read the motions.
No, well then, they, I mean, no, no,
you know,
no,
then you can read the motions. So no one has challenged me on whether or not that phrase was cut out of the motions.
Yeah.
What is not clear is what the significance of the cutting out of that section of the, because you know some people say that it shouldn't be in the motions, and you know the people who are in favor of the motion don't want either of the caveats to be in the motion. Yeah. So, you know, it could be oversight, it could be deliberate, it could have been the consequence of negotiations, it could have just
Do you think it matters, Sukhanathi?
No, what does matter is when the constitution does eventually change what the wording will be. Right now, the broad agreement is that there should be no compensation with expropriation. Then that in on its own does not change the constitution, but Parliament now has to sit down and draft the law, amend section 25 of the constitution and remove that just and equitable compensation. That's that's section 25 subsection 7 of the constitution.
Yeah.
It will have to remove that. But now this happens, the key then will be the drafting of that replacement motion, whether it will indeed say do not affect the constitution, the economy. Right now, it must be for the public good and for the public interest, which is the growing the economy.
Does anybody know to what extent the Constitutional Court has oversight over what is written into the constitution?
Well, it has oversight over the Bill of Rights. So for a change to the Bill of Rights, you need a 75%
majority. And the land clause is in the Bill of Rights.
No, it's not in the Bill of Rights.
Actually, it is.
No, it isn't.
Yeah,
no.
Section 25 is in rights. What the Constitutional Court will do, it has to certify this as having met the constitutional requirements.
Okay,
it cannot be at odds. And you'll have to read that together with the other rights, not just that line on its own.
And then the other weird thing that happened this week was that the government was going to debate the independence or otherwise of the Reserve Bank. And at the last moment, pulled out. What would have done that, Hillary? Were they frightened of ratings agencies, or does anybody have any insight into why they would have pulled that debate?
Logically, it doesn't make any sense I think that's the Ramaphosa call. Like, why would you go in something like that? Makes no difference at all to whether it's the running of the Reserve Bank.
But it's a conference resolution, so they're going to do it.
But
so the delay is just to you know. Consult a bit more and see. You know,
so it's got nothing to do with Moody's about the rate
cuts. Moody's is here this week until I think Thursday, and there was that was one theory is that they were holding back so it wouldn't be debated as it were in front of Moody's. But I'm sure Moody's can watch the television. But I think you know there's been some. It is a conference resolution, but because it is in some way such a superfluous motion, I think there has been some ambivalence, quite a lot of it within the party itself.
Yeah, but they've subsequently re-established a date.
But you would have thought, though, that if there's any logic to what Ramaphosa is doing, he's just getting all that horrible stuff out of the way quickly, like the land issue and then the central bank issue. Okay.
I think
apparently strongly in favour of nationalising the Reserve Bank, which is like being strongly in favour of the colour green, you know? I mean, it's not...
Well, in principle, there's no reason not to nationalise it, but it's a cost which really is completely unnecessary.
Yeah.
You could be in principle in favour, but just not do it. That's also an option.
Yeah. Okay. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back. Most companies try to keep their customers and their clients alive. They're useful to them in that they buy their products, and while you're allowed to, you know, steal from them every now and again, and perhaps indulge in a bit of dodgy accounting, actually killing your clients turns out to be not such a good idea. And Ron Darby, we find this week that Tiger Brands. Not for the first time, is in the news the wrong way around, and is being blamed, although there's some confusion about whether the blame is direct or indirect, for the outbreak of listeriosis, which has killed over 150 people.
Yeah.
How does a company recover from something like that? This is like life is said to many.
A company shouldn't, right? Especially a CEO. I was quite surprised hearing a CEO defend this. I mean, 150 people have died from your product, 180 odd people,
yeah.
And you have a CEO still there defending it. Like in any other jurisdiction, whether UK, in the US, you can't be resigning. That's the first shocking thing. I think as a enterprise, that division of Tiger Brands, I don't see that surviving at all. I mean, why is he talking to Tiger Brands? Why is he not resigning immediately? That's 150 odd people, 80 people that have died related to your product. I don't know why. Well, in what world is this where you sit there and trying to defend?
Well, his argument is that
Jimmy Manu used to do
just
the marketing
company,
department. Maybe we can blame it on him. Maybe this is the lingering.
I mean, like the health. Now that they're going to go and talk about health inspectors, SAA health inspectors not being up to date, not being meeting standards. But the truth is, Tiger Brands, this is your responsibility. Well, and as CEO, it's your division. It's ultimately your call. Yeah. You should take the chop.
I feel a little bit like Peter and Lucy Gagaba. So yeah. I'm not defending them. Yeah, I'm not necessarily defending them, but just to be clear on
that. That first press conference should have been a chairman there talking about this.
But his argument is that there's no direct link between enterprise products and and actually the health department doesn't disagree with that statement.
The health department first.
It
comes from their plant, a particular plant that belongs to Tiger Brand. That's where the outbreak is
they
from.
There's environmental. When they tested the meat, there was nothing wrong with the meat. Well, there was traces of listeriosis in the meat.
In the meat,
at a very small level.
Yes.
So what they did find was that in the environment of the factory, there was higher levels
Who's
of
responsible for it?
Can I just read to you a passage that Sikonati is responsible for as deputy editor of the Financial Mail?
Yes, that's
so they're tremendous. Talking about the Tiger Brand CEO, Lawrence McDougall, right? Mm. He says he's adamant there's no direct link, quote, at this stage between its enterprise meat plant in Polokwane and the deaths of over 180 people from listeriosis. The health department has said it has found its source. I don't understand what he means by a direct link, Motsoaledi, this is the minister, told Business Day TV on Monday. We were diagnosing the whole country, and we think we have done our work clinically. Perhaps the issue of linking directly to particular patients is a legal matter, and I'm sure he was speaking legalistically. But on our side, we have formed that link between the outbreak and the enterprise food facility in Polokwane.
Yes.
I mean, that didn't come more directly than that.
Exactly. Huh? Resign. I can't get the South African thing.
How do you...
You don't kill mine workers. People die in mines and no one quits. And now 180 odd people are linked to your thing. And you're still standing there and defending it. Because maybe the poorest of the poor are the most affected by it. So, no. Oh, come on. South African corporate.
In South Africa, there's no consequences for wrongdoing. In 2007, Tiger Brands agreed to pay 98.8 million rand for its price in fixing the bread, which was stealing from poor people.
Yep.
Now you have this kills 180 people, listeriosis, and
we have a little soundbite done for us by our wonderful production crew on the kinds of things that Tiger Brands has gone through in the past few years.
Tiger Brands made headlines this week for all the wrong reasons. Its share price fell close to 8% on Monday as panic spread after the Department of Health and the National Institute of Communicable Diseases announced the recall of its enterprise processed meats. This due to a strain of deadly listeria bacteria found at its factory in Polokwane. And this is not the first incident to dent the brand's image. In 2015, Tiger Brands was involved in an accounting scandal in Kenya, resulting in it reporting 50 million rand in losses that year. The year before that, it had to recall some of its cooking sauces and rice products after traces of toxic ingredients were discovered. And in 2007, Tiger Brands paid a 98.7 million rand penalty after admitting that it participated in bread and milling cartels.
So there you go. Not a pretty story if you're a corporate.
At that point, okay, my point I was making is there's no consequences.
Yeah.
180 people have now died. In China, about 5 years ago, there was a baby infant formula. Yeah. Do you know what happened to the executives of those companies? They were executed. After a trial.
Before we execute Mr. McDougall.
The new BRICS model.
I do think the defensiveness is what was the complete mistake. It's kind of everything crisis communication sort of 101 tells you not to be. And what was also missing is a sort of sense of seriousness and urgency. And his lawyers might have an empathy more than anything. Yeah. Yeah. And keeping in mind that this whole thing in a way has really highlighted is the extent to which poor people in South Africa depend on these processed meats. You know, unfortunately, all these VAT zero-rated healthy things are not actually what a lot of poor people eat. They eat processed meats because they're cheap and they're convenient, and people send their children to school with polony sandwiches and so on. So it really looms very large, not for us, I'm sure, but enterprise cold meat polony does loom large in the lives of poor people. And so the empathy was completely missing, and the sort of urgency was missing, because what he should have been saying, I mean, maybe he has a case, you know, there was no, even though the genome might be the same, there was no direct link, but I didn't get the sense that, you know, we have urgently launched a huge, enormous investigation. We are kind of falling over ourselves to do something about this.
Yeah.
And that was what was completely missing.
I don't know why I'm being defending here, but he did. First of all, their argument, I'm not supporting this, right? Okay. But their argument.
I'm
just describing what he said. So their argument is, first of all, that they took not only the products that they were told to take off the shelves. They took absolutely every single processed meat product off the shelves. They have paid everybody back for all of this. They've stopped the production. They've increased the checks that they do from daily checks to hourly checks. They are kind of sympathetic. So what you can say about his denying that there's a direct link is that, you know, isn't that the what you're forced to do as a company director? You know, if somebody accuses you of something, you have to say, until it is demonstrated, you have to say it's not demonstrated. You know, isn't that the responsible thing to do?
Like a public,
we are going, doing everything we can to investigate and find out what happened.
Would tell you to do.
You don't have to first say,
I take what you're saying very seriously and I'm going to do something about it.
Yeah.
Like, do we know anything like about Lawrence McDougall? Like enterprise CEO, basically. What you're saying, behave like an Eskom CEO.
Yeah.
Like, we know there's a problem, we investigate. Oh, it's clear as daylight, it belongs to you. Like, take ownership of this thing, right?
Because he in the press conference, he didn't say just once casually that there's no link. Yeah. I mean, it was like every second sentence was like, there is no demonstrated link. He doesn't, you know, in some cases, he didn't say
perhaps he's an
as
accountant.
Yet.
I mean, that might explain his response. Hillary, the economy turns out not to be on its sort of dying knees at the moment. It's actually sitting up in bed, and it's grown, it grew at 3.1% in the fourth quarter. That's extraordinary.
Our statistics wonderful, and we never had a recession.
Yeah.
I wouldn't
why
say that.
Why did it feel like we were?
exactly. I wouldn't say we were really kind of all bouncy. We should keep in mind that 1.3% is not exactly. It's still going backwards in per capita.
3.1%.
3.1 in the fourth quarter, for that quarter, and for the year as a whole last year, 1.3%, which is admittedly significantly higher than we were expecting sort of 6 months ago, but isn't exactly anything to write home about yet.
Yeah.
And we do still need to get to the bottom of what gave us this unexpected bounce in the fourth quarter. Well, first of all, agriculture absolutely went demented. Agriculture had been improving off the back of the drought for like 8 quarters, and people thought that would be starting to slow down, and all of a sudden it grows 37.5% because of animal products.
Yeah.
I've spoken to some agricultural economists who were very surprised.
Enterprises factory, you mean?
This is cattle,
cattle, sheep, and
this is cattle and stuff. Yeah. And there could be an explanation in terms of that lots of cattle were slaughtered in the drought, and now the price has gone crazy. But And then there's the Enterprise Poloni story. But something funny is happening here that we didn't know about. And I think economists are still trying to explain it.
It's worrying for me. That growth, 3.1%, it was 21,000 jobs lost. The whole argument about,
there's growth. With the job losses.
And support, that's the argument, right? Yeah. Growth, you get jobs. 20,000 jobs lost. So and this is, again, South Africa's problem. We're not quite understanding what
we have to understand.
There was one other good sign about the fourth quarter figures, which may or may not be sustained, which is that there's a bounce in investment.
Yeah.
Now, if that were to be sustained,
is that a Ramaphosa bounce or what?
It's before Ramaphosa is elected. That's what's interesting about
it. Was it in anticipation of? I mean, basically, the markets went for
weeks
before.
More than we did.
Well, they did, yeah, because they were calling it. But you can't have called. Sorry, you cannot have called the vote between 3,000 or 4,000 people down to the nearest, down to 100, and claim you knew all along that it was.
And you started importing machinery on the
guessing.
Ship in anticipation.
You had to have been guessing.
Amazing, but if it was, then credit to them, and at least the figures are starting to look better.
Yeah.
We're not at 2% even yet. Never mind 3%, but there's the basis.
But okay, so then, guys, how does the problem is jobless growth?
Yeah.
How do you fix that? How do you make jobs? How do you create job? Each of us create a job at this table. How would you do it, Ron?
No idea right now. It's just
it's an unfair question.
Yeah.
but it's complicated.
Yeah, it's very complicated.
How do you do it?
Yeah, I mean,
you know, you've got people who can create. People can create tax revenue for you with their profits.
Mm.
And with which you might then go and build a bridge and create jobs for people in building the bridge.
Well, I mean, I would say the easiest, I would say this, but the thing that you don't do is you don't demonize business. You don't try and make out that business is it's the enemy of transformation, the enemy of growth, the enemy of the country, the enemy. You know what I mean? You try and embrace business, and you too. Yeah, exactly. But that's not, that's not our history. Our history is to, take business and to, put it on one side and to say it's time for business to come to the table. You know, things, sort of statements like that. And
the cycles of every country in the world goes to, time when business are the bad guys. It's under Obama when he first came in, business like, hey, let's regulate you and because you must behave, right? And then for his first term, at least, and most of it, they were there, and here comes Trump, we love business.
Yeah,
so
okay.
Every cycle, right? So just
you can have the last word on the second item you were having.
Cut tax, corporate income tax. Get people to come and invest here and arrest the thieves that have been in charge for the past 10 years. Confidence, that's how you build it.
Yes. There you go. There you go, he's always got it. Good night, and thank you very much.